Da da da, intro music, da da da. Hello, friends, and welcome to The Grind, a podcast that has a very simple goal and purpose, and that's to help you, our audience, get better at small business. This is episode 12. It's all about negotiation strategy, and I'm your host, Jashar Rentz. And joining me today is a person that I have known for a long time, that I have talked with about business for a long time, and that I'm really excited that is joining me on the podcast today. So as you know, since we started this podcast, and we are a whopping now 12 episodes deep, I've been kind of trying to figure out the co-host thing. This has been a project that's a passion project for me that I think is fun and I think can help a lot of people, but it's somebody that, it takes a lot of work to do this. You know, for every 45-minute episode that you hear, you know, we're putting in hours of time planning, audio editing, you know, getting it all set up so the finished product is there. And it's hard to do that alone, so I've been really kind of searching for, you know, a consistent co-host, and I wanted someone, you know, that had a broader and a different perspective than me and different experience, but deep, you know, valuable experience that can bring real knowledge to our audience. And I wanted someone that, you know, complemented my own business experience, which is kind of limited to the field that I'm in natural medicine. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine, a business mentor, and a new co-host of the program, Dr. Eric Scroggins. He's awesome at small business. I met him first when our company came over to the bank branch that he manages, and his experience ranges from coach to financial advisor, even spiritual leader, and I have personally found his guidance to be, you know, very strong and huge in terms of the growth of our business. But I'll let him tell his own story. So, Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It is an absolute pleasure. I am so excited and have a ton of passion around helping small business. And so being invited to be your co-host and seeing where this journey takes us is one that I am so excited about. So it is gonna be a fun time. Hopefully we get a lot of feedback and a lot of additional questions down the road, but I'm excited to explore where this road takes us.
Now you do some business consulting individually and coaching on the side. What's that been like for you?
It is fabulous. I really have enjoyed that part of my life. I am a banker and finance guy, so naturally as part of that role in business banking, I do advice giving and mentoring and helping people strategize their business. But I also have my own consulting and coaching practice where I've been able to really connect with the leaders of small business and help them see some phenomenal results, mainly around strategy, vision, employee engagement, working through difficult situations, position their financials correctly, budgeting, those kind of aspects of small business that are fundamental and really pillars of success as it relates to small business and clients in diverse groups. So it's been a fun experience.
I think people get this impression that, you know, the advice that you can get from folks is sometimes so complex, but I remember coming to you and one of the first piece of advice you ever gave me was essentially to do nothing for a little while. You know, we were trying to kind of do too much, reach too far, borrow too much, you know, spend too much. And your advice was essentially to just kind of tighten the ship up and keep, to use the podcast phrase, keep focusing on the grind, yeah, and developing. And, you know, that ended up being pretty crucial advice, because what we see in terms of business is it's really all about the you know, difference between what you're bringing in and what you're putting out in terms of cost. And we were able to keep our costs really low. And like, as a business now, if you look at our overall business debt, not only will we have it completely paid off within the next 3 years, but it's pretty low, mm-hmm, you know, all told. But we made sacrifices and tough choices, you know, in order to keep it that way.
Right. So, yeah. Business owners are notoriously looking for additional profit streams and trying to do everything, right, and swallow the elephant, you know, whole instead of one bite at a time. So I'm facing that with a couple of my clients right now where, you know, the word of the day is focus. Focus, mm-hmm, on the most important thing and keep it going. And there's going to be time for growth. There's going to be time for adding additional strategies. But sometimes you just have to to really hone in on what you're trying to accomplish and focus on that.
Yeah. So if they, if folks were interested in learning more about you and your consulting, where could they find you online?
So two places, on Facebook, Eric J. Scroggins, PhD, you can reach me there, or on my website at ericscroggins.com, that's ericscroggins.com.
Excellent, excellent, fabulous. Well, you know, before we get into anything further, because we're gonna get in, we have a pretty cool episode today that I think will help a lot of folks. I was talking to a person yesterday that I think this will really, this negotiation strategy will really help. But I wanna mention our sponsor, because we certainly don't do this without a little help to put all the things together. And that person right now is Alpine Integrated Medicine. So Alpine Integrated Medicine is, full disclosure, the clinic that I run, but it has graciously volunteered to pay for our various recording equipment and some of my time and all of the time required to do the production. So I really appreciate their sponsorship of the podcast. But Alpine Integrated Medicine is premier health and wellness care on the east side of Seattle. We are a naturopathic focused clinic, but we feature acupuncture, massage therapy, and an incredible IV therapy suite for vitamin infusions. So I highly recommend that you check out Alpine Integrated Medicine online at aim4healthnw.com. That's the number four. aim4healthnw.com, Alpine Integrated Medicine. Thank you very much. And you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/TGCastNW, online, where you can find the episodes every single time at tg-cast.com. I'd invite you to also please subscribe to the podcast there, because you can get it in your email every single time we drop an episode. And if you have questions, if you have feedback, and if you have problems of practice that you'd like us to discuss on the show, email us at tgcastnw@gmail.com so you can get those at us. Basically, today we're trying out a little bit of a new format, and we're going to start with a smaller segment, and that is all around authentic problems of practice. So stuff that we've been thinking about in our own lives or in the lives of the people that we've been working with, and just kind of riffing off of some thoughts and brainstorming thoughts and solutions to some of those problems of practice. We would like to eventually include your problems of practice. So if you have something in your business that you're working through and you want us to talk about it a little bit on the show, then shoot us an email over at tgcastnw@gmail.com. And then after that short segment, we'll go into our main topic, which is really about how we can become great negotiators. So in terms of problems of practice, I'm gonna put Eric on the spot first and just ask, you know, have there been anything that you've been working on that has been a challenge that you'd be willing to throw out for the audience to talk about?
Personally?
Personally, within your job, within a client's business that you've been working with?
Well, my life stays pretty busy, so there's always something problematic to face.
Right?
So,
every day.
Yeah, I recently made a move. I just did an episode on my Facebook page about this idea of going back but not going backwards. Mm-hmm. And so I had to face a personal problem in terms of I took a position in a different area of the bank, and I'm now back at the area where you met me. Mm-hmm. And so emotionally, that was a little bit of a mind exercise, because I had to find myself successful in taking this role that I had previously had. And so I had to work through my own emotion, my own strategies. How do you re-engage your employees? How do you have them see you as a credible leader since you abandoned them a year and a half ago? And, you know, all the dynamics that are associated with that. And so being able to manage your culture, being able to manage your emotion, being confident in who you are and why you're making the decision was something that I just recently, in fact, 30 days ago, I just faced this, and I'm continuing to implement the strategies that I developed to work through them.
How much of that is about expectations for yourself in terms of success? You know, because
all of it,
right? Because well, because we go through, right? We have a schema around, you know, career trajectory, and you make a move, and in your mind, you have set yourself up to be like, this is my next move,
yes.
Right? And if you're thinking about a linear like progression, then once I've made my next move, if I don't make another next move beyond that or whatever, then what does that mean, right?
Absolutely. And I had to, my wife and I communicate heavily on all corporate decisions. Anything I do business, we're in business together. My wife is a wonderful support. So it really had to come down to, okay, let's take the ego off the table.
Right.
Let's take the ladder climbing off the table, and let's find the spot that makes me the most happy. Well, even though you make that decision with good fundamental information, executing on that decision can play with your emotions and can play with your expectations of yourself. And are you really taking territory by going back to this place? Well, quite honestly, it's the most influential place in my life.
Yeah.
One of the most influential places. And so you're exactly right. Yeah. That setting proper expectations for yourself is key as you execute in this kind of difficulty.
I was listening to a speaker at the AANP conference over the summer where Dr. Brooke and I were also speaking at, and she, her kind of like, she had this very canned kind of philosophy about business growth, and it was all about increasing the dollars and paying everybody else to do everything for you. And I'm not discounting the fact that that could be a fine way to go, but to me, like, you do work for a reason, and maybe it's like the blue collar upbringing or whatever that I come from, but I feel like I want to be engaged in work that is meaningful for me. And, you know, that doesn't always mean hiring someone to do everything so I can oversee and watch like the dollars trickle into the money bin or whatever.
Right.
You know, like
right.
there is, you definitely want financial security, you want financial success, but there's a component, a personal component, you know, that you have to like meet.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Which kind of speaks to the second problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in my private practice, I'm facing some challenges where good challenges, my business is growing.
Right.
Clients are coming on board, but that poses some additional challenges. How do I handle marketing? How do I handle sales?
Right.
Do I hire an assistant now or do I wait? Mm-hmm. Do I do the work myself?
You know, you're building back again now.
I'm building, right? Mm-hmm. I'm building again, and I'm facing those challenges of where are proper dollars being spent?
Right.
You, when you're a small business, you can't waste marketing dollars, right? And so I want to make sure that the things that I'm doing are strategic and have a return on that investment, as well as do I have an expense line of a new assistant to help me with things that I shouldn't be doing.
Right.
All of those are critical decisions to be making right now.
Yeah.
And so learning how to do that is an interesting journey.
Well, if our audience is thinking about a similar problem of practice, I have a couple of thoughts. These are just coming off the top of my head, so you know, take them for what they're worth. But my advice in this problem of practice would be somewhere along the line of you have to kind of hit the reset button a little bit with your staff, right? And because things are going to change. If you're going to be an effective leader in an organization, even if you come back to the same organization, you can't always do things the exact same way. And the staff is going to expect you to do things the same way because that's how people work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think being basically owning it, being honest about the fact that, hey, I took a shot. I wanted to try this thing out. But ultimately, what I had to do was be true to who I am and what I'm best at, and that's being here and being part of this family and these relationships. And now that we're back here, what we have to do is refocus on the goal here. And what is that goal? And that goal is making this place as successful as it can be.
Absolutely.
You know, and being upfront and just being like, this is who I am, you know, and I appreciate you guys giving me the leeway and the flexibility. I'm sure it was stressful while I was gone to take that shot, but I had to try it. I tried it. And here we are.
Absolutely.
You know?
I there's a line that I have in my book, not to put a shameless plug on my
book.
My book is Vision Blockers.
I've read the book, whatever.
Shameless plug in the book. But there is this one topic that I went back to as I went through this process that you're talking about right now. And I make this statement that nothing that is ever said or done is wasted.
Yep.
And what I meant by that is that every experience you should learn from and be able to invest that knowledge into the next thing that you're doing.
Yep.
Even if it means going back to where you found yourself happy, take the learning and the education, the knowledge, the wisdom that you gained in that recent previous experience and apply it to what you're doing now.
Yeah.
Should make you a better person, should make you a better leader, should make you a better business person.
Yeah. Well, and I guess maybe as a transition point, you talked about how ego plays into that. And ego also plays into the main topic that we're getting into today, which is how to become a great negotiator. I can tell you personally that ego, because you know me, and if the audience has gotten to know me over the last, you know, couple episodes, I'm a pretty energetic, sort of alpha-y, kind of straight shooter kind of guy. And sometimes, you know, that ego that comes along with that can get you into problems when you're trying to solve a solve something or reach an agreement that really is mutually beneficial, right?
Yeah, absolutely. People.
Yeah, so the question that we're getting at today is really, you know, how do we become great negotiators? Because in our lives, in every which way and in our business, we are faced with these small moments of negotiation every day. Whether they're difficult conversations with a coworker or with a customer or even with at home with a spouse or with our families, there are always moments where we have things that we want in a situation and they've got things that they want in a situation, and how are you going to get through those things? Mm-hmm. Quick example that I want to hone in on. This is a person that I had been working with a little bit, and she owns a clinic, and she's in kind of a tough situation because when she first started her clinic, she was renting space to a colleague of hers at a very, very cheap rate. Because she needed someone in the clinic, she was just starting out, the person was a really good friend, blah, blah, blah. Well, now, fast forward a couple of years later, and the costs of her business are quite high, and this person really isn't pulling their weight in terms of the cost of the business that they're paying for with their rent. In fact, their rent, and you might not even believe this, is probably about a quarter of what it should be if you really think about the actual cost of her space and the cost of her rooms and that sort of thing.
Yeah, tough situation.
Right? So how does this person, how does she negotiate this situation and maintain her desire to keep a friend, maintain a desire to keep a tenant, and increase her bottom line by adjusting the rent so that it is appropriate?
Yeah.
That's a really, really tough position to be in, right? So how do you do that? Well, for us, we're going to go through basically a strategy that has been talked about and you know, made popular by Bill Urey and what's the other guy's name? I always forget.
Roger Fisher.
That's right. I always forget Roger Fisher. Poor Roger Fisher. Sorry, Roger Fisher. If you ever listen to this episode, I'm really sorry that I always leave you out. But Bill Urey of the Harvard Negotiation Project, and they've got a strategy in this book, Getting to Yes, which I highly recommend you pick up and read. It's excellent. And it's called A Strategy for Principled Negotiation.
Yeah, and I think that one of the misnomers is that people think, well, negotiation, that's a sales tactic, or that's a contract tactic, or that's a high level engagement. And truthfully, negotiation happens in various different facets of our life. Whether you're trying to get your kids to go to bed at a certain time, or get them off to school, or you're negotiating with your spouse or significant other, or whatever, that negotiation takes place across many facets of life, and learning how to do that successfully is a vital strategy, whether in business or in your personal life.
Right. So, the first thing I would like to do is ask you all to think about what is success in a negotiation. Just think about it for a second, because I'm guessing that many of you may be thinking about it in a way that talks about kind of winners and losers. You know, maybe you're successful in a negotiation if you get everything that you want, or the other person doesn't get what they want, or you get 80% of what you want, or you're defining it kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try to define success in a different way here in negotiation. It's not a positional, not a win-lose, not a power struggle, but success in a negotiation is using a principled method to reach an outcome that meets the underlying interests of both parties. And the word underlying, I think, is important here. And that ultimately is fair and justifiable given any measurable and neutral data sources. And objective data sources is also a big part of this process.
Yeah, I think simply put, you know, you're looking for the quote unquote win-win, right?
Right.
What makes the positive outcome of a negotiation powerful for everybody involved? It's not to try to invoke your authority or power over someone,
right,
or you've positionally placed yourself above them, but success should be, how do I create a win-win for everybody that's involved?
Exactly. So we'll just go through the steps really quickly. You can read about them more in the book, and then maybe we'll talk through a couple of examples about how those play out. Mm-hmm. But the first step is go to the balcony. They talk about this in Getting to Yes, is a phrase they use, go to the balcony. It's a metaphorical balcony. Many of you may not live in a home with a balcony yet. It could be a goal. But go to the metaphorical balcony, right? Raise yourself up above the situation, rise above, become unemotional, right? Go to the balcony. Try not to let your emotions influence your conversations. Suspend your own reactions to what people are saying to you and try to remain calm and objective. That's the first step. This is a hard step to do.
It really is, because this is where ego gets involved,
yeah,
right?
That's
because
right.
You're in the middle of a negotiation, or you're in the middle of a situation that would develop into a negotiation, and all of a sudden the emotion mm-hmm. gets so strong and you become passionate and you want to win, and you know, all of those things begin to happen. Going to the balcony allows you to take a 30,000 foot view of the actual situation without your emotion involved.
I find that it's difficult to go to the balcony most for me in personal negotiations, like with my wife, right? When you get you get personal relationships involved, or like your kids or something, it is really hard to be objective. I swear I had an issue with a school official person with my daughter last year. And I swear to you, I handled it so poorly. I could have destroyed this person, physically, like just destroyed them with missiles. I mean, I was so angry. And at the end of the day, I realized like I had to step back and you know, think about it objectively.
You know what's interesting is I had to go to the balcony. I learned a lot about this when I was raising my youngest, my daughter. She was born a phenomenal negotiator. Mm-hmm. And with her trying to get her to do, she's got a very strong will, she's very direct, and even as a 2, 3, 4 year old, she was powerful.
Yeah.
And we would try to get her to do things, and her will was so strong, she wouldn't budge. And so going to the balcony meant, okay, what are we really trying to accomplish? Someone gave us some advice, give her choices. Well,
yes.
For instance, if you wanted her to go to bed in 5 minutes, well, make it either 5 or 10 minutes. Well, with Alyssa, she would say 7.
Right.
You know, because
she's a classic positional bargainer.
She wanted to be in control at 2, right? But you have to go above it. And am I really caring if she goes to bed at 5 minutes or 10 minutes?
Right.
Go above that and figure out what's really important.
That's a good segue. Once you are calm and you are on the balcony, you can start to do the second thing, which is uncover and focus on people's real interests.
Yeah.
What is your daughter really wanting to do? Is it really about 5 or 7 minutes, or is it about the idea that she has some semblance of control over her bedtime routine?
Yeah.
Right? So you start to dig in, and you know, this is one of those ones where it takes practice. It's hard to uncover people's underlying interests because oftentimes we don't state them in a negotiation.
No, but when you do, it's so powerful because it's really what people are motivated to accomplish,
right?
Their own self-interest. It comes out in terms of control, but it's not really the control. I just want to have a part.
Right.
Right.
Right, exactly. We had a situation at the clinic where folks wanted to be involved as leaders and have a decision-making process, and there was some negotiation over how to make that happen. Well, that conversation manifested in one way, but I understood after asking questions that what folks really wanted was a seat at the table.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted an influence in the process of our company and felt to feel heard, right?
Yeah.
And so what I did is I created what is now the leadership team, and anyone can be a part of it if they want to be a leader. It's going to come with some responsibilities too, right?
Sure.
It's not just you get to be a leader, but you get to, we have meetings every month. We go through problems of practice, you know, in the clinic, we make decisions on how things are going to run, and I get people's feedback. And you know, if they're strongly overruling me and I see a real sense that what I want to do isn't the right thing, then they get the say. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Part of Bill Ury and Roger Fisher's strategy here also is about asking questions. And you kind of mentioned that. This is a skill that the audience and really us should hone, is this idea of being able to ask open-ended questions.
Yep.
Questions that elicit almost an essay response, not something that is a yes or no answer. Are you happy?
Right.
Did you take out the trash? Are you going to bed? Those are very, very finite answers to those. They have a one or the other answer. But being able to ask questions, give me some feedback on what you're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts related to this issue?
Right.
What are you trying to accomplish? And, you know, having people open up, and sometimes you got to pause after asking the question and let them think.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Even the direct question of, you know, what is the most important thing to you in this list of 3 things? You know, you can find, and you could, we could do a whole episode. We could probably do a whole collegiate course, right, if you had to, on asking questions, because the way you you know, solicit information from people is really huge. But you want to ask them, like you said, in an open-ended way, and in a way that helps you to see, like, what are they really trying to get at here?
Yeah.
You know, I'm negotiating with the staff person over their scheduled work hours after I just hired them, right? And they really are digging into 9 to 5, and I'm trying to figure out, because I need them to kind of work till 6, but they can't do 6, and then I figure out it's got to do with childcare,
right?
You know, so you kind of digging, like, oh, if I can find a way to meet this childcare underlying issue, I could probably get them till 6.
Right.
You know, maybe it's kicking a stipend for an extra hour of childcare or something. You know, there could be a creative solution here once I figure out what they really want, which is just to have their kid taken care of for the extra hour.
Yeah, and a wise negotiator asks those questions.
Yeah. Once you have focused on and uncovered the interests, you then are supposed to invent options for mutual gain. And basically there is, I think, a couple of things here. One, fundamentally, there is a power in a negotiation when you are the one bringing a solution.
Oh, man.
If you go to a contract negotiation and you bring the contract that you think is right and you present that, all of a sudden that's the document that you're working off of, not the other person's document. You've created the starting point. Already you're quote unquote winning the negotiation just by bringing the idea to the table. The person that sits back and waits for things to come to them so they can kind of counterpunch, they're always reacting and they end up not having sustainable results in negotiations.
Agreed, yeah.
So
yeah.
That's the first thing. The second thing is options for mutual gain. Don't fix it on your starting position, right? You're trying to find a solution that really does meet their needs. And that can look all kinds of different ways.
Yeah, I think once you look compassionate, right? You look like somebody that's playing on both sides, that's helping them advance their own mission.
Yep.
So often, and that's kind of where we started, right? Don't get this positional negotiation, but this is where that comes into play. You really have to be motivated by an outcome that is good for both sides.
Yeah.
And if you do that, then you really do take, for lack of a better term, take the power position.
You do. Well, when you shift, and I think they talk about this in Getting to Yes as well, you shift to their side.
Yeah.
Right? You go from, if you imagine a negotiating table where you're sitting across from somebody, sit next to that person.
Yeah.
By the way, try this in a negotiation. It does actually physically work. Yeah. You want to think about it from their perspective. And when you do that, and you not only come up with a better solution, you show them that you care about them, which is good for you in
yeah.
the negotiation.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's interesting. In my coaching practice, I shifted this just a few months ago. In my office, I would sit across the desk from the person I was coaching, and it looked like dictator, recipient, dictator. Recipient. And I reorganized my office, and I did two chairs that are sitting next to each other. And what I'm finding is the conversation is completely collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
It's creative.
Right.
We're both working to the same. I'm not there to tell my clients what to do.
Right.
I'm helping them discover how they can do what they do more effectively.
Right.
And so being able to sit next to someone is so powerful.
We're doing it right now. You can't see us because this is just our audio, but we're sitting next to each other at a table, you know, going through this stuff, talking about this, having a real conversation. So invent options for mutual gain. And when you do that and you start to, you know, what happens, I guess they raise this in the book, what happens when your options for mutual gain don't work? And the other side sort of digs into their position. No, I want $16 an hour, period, or I'm walking out the door. That's when you start to remember some techniques that will help you in a tough negotiation. And the first one is to use objective or independent standards. And don't, under any circumstance, if you can avoid it, positionally bargain. So what is positional bargaining? You know, positional bargaining is I'm asking for $20 an hour, you're trying to offer me 12. And so then I say, well, I'll take 18. And you'll say, well, I'll do 15. And then we meet at 16.50. In the middle.
Right.
That's like a classic and overly simplistic way that people think negotiations work, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of that, it's better to use an objective standard that you can adhere to. So, well, for this position, the average salary range is, you know, 16. So even though I am, you know, want to give you 12, the average range is 16. However, you don't have any experience at this job, so you shouldn't be at the average range. So I can see that you want more, but really, this job pays this much, so I'll be willing to offer you 14, but I can't really go much higher than that.
Right, and it offers so much power because you're providing reasoning behind the decision, not just you're stuck on your position.
Yep.
And I think it really is, I've seen it to work that way. People are like, oh, they understand who I am and what I'm doing, and that makes sense.
The opposite side of that is you have to allow yourself to be swayed when there's compelling evidence in their favor too, frankly. You
100%.
Know, I had a similar conversation where I did have to pay someone the very top end of my range, but this person had incredible experience. They had experience exactly what I wanted them to do. Like they were a just perfect hire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? That person, based on objective standards, deserves the top end of the range.
Right.
And I'm gonna expect top end of range work from them too.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
So that's also important. So use objective standards, don't positionally bargain. And then finally, and my favorite one is identify and remember your BATNA.
Yeah.
I love the BATNA. And if you don't know what the BATNA is, the BATNA stands for Best Alternative to Negotiated Agreement. It's the thing, it's your fallback point. It's the thing that you will do if everything falls apart and you have to walk away.
Absolutely. Yeah. What will I settle for? What's my bottom line?
Yep.
Where do I walk away from this?
Yep.
And where will I feel good if I've reached this but I didn't get to X?
Yep.
I'm okay.
The first step is identifying it, because in a negotiation, when you go in and you plan, most people don't think about the BATNA.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. They're like, what? They don't know what their walkaway point will be.
Yeah.
So they have no idea when they've reached it, you know? And if you know that ahead of time, that's important.
I negotiate contracts for speaking and for coaching agreements and different. I don't have a set, here's my rate, right? Mm-hmm. Because I feel like depending on what you need, I want to be able to tailor to meet your need.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm negotiating these kind of things all the time. And I, before I ever present my proposal, I have my BATNA.
Right.
What is my best alternative? What am I willing to accept and still be honored?
Right.
Just feel like I'm being honorable about the position, about the work, about the job that I'm about to accomplish.
Yep.
And so this is a powerful tool.
If you can
think about this before you even enter the negotiation.
And there's something about cultivating your BATNA that they talk about. And that is doing things behind the scenes to create a better BATNA for yourself, which then gives you leverage in a negotiation situation. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool. So let's you know, think about this idea. Let's go back to the example, because this is the last step. Let's go back to the example of this friend of mine who's negotiating the space with her friend in the clinic, right? What's her, you know, she has to not only have a walkaway point, she has to cultivate a stronger walkaway point.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe what I would do as an example is, I might start shopping for acupuncturists.
Yeah.
I might start putting out some jobs, putting out feelers, getting a couple of people that are interested, sharing my new rental rates, that kind of thing, publicizing it, putting it out there, getting some interest. And then when I go into that negotiation and the person digs in their heels and says, you know what, forget this, I don't care about our friendship, I want my cheaper rate, blah, blah, blah. And you could say, you know, I really wish that wasn't your position. Mm-hmm. So I think we're gonna have to part ways. I've already been, you know, if you're not willing to move on this, we're going to have to part ways. I've already gotten three people that are willing to fill the space, and I can move on that immediately. Is this what you really want to do?
Right.
You know, and by cultivating that BATNA, man, you know, you have strengthened your negotiating position. That person will be like, oh man, I just tried to pull a move and it didn't work. I better back off and just, you know, take the offer.
Yeah, you know, let's talk about that for just a second, mm-hmm. because I think some people could view that as not identifying what's in the best interest of both parties there.
Agreed,
right?
Agreed.
Because that you could look at that and go, wait a minute, he's got a fallback position, so he's positionally negotiating.
Right.
No, my first interest is restoring this relationship.
Correct.
My first interest is maintaining this friendship. My first interest is this. But I'm still a smart business person.
Right.
And at the end of the day, I've got to fill this space at an adequate rate to pay my expenses.
Right.
Otherwise, I'm a nonprofit.
Right.
And
all these people
that
work with us go broke. Yeah, and they can't feed their families and, like, you know,
absolutely,
all that stuff,
because
right?
the outcome of staying where we are is tragic, right?
Right.
I'm not a philanthropy.
Right.
I'm in business to make money.
Right.
And part of that is I got to get the right rate for this space.
Yep.
And you've got to share in these expenses. So I think be cautious about thinking too quickly that this is not looking at it from both sides of the table. It
right.
really is, but like Jashar says, you have to position yourself with a fallback that strengthens you, that, look, I can walk away because I've got this resource behind me.
Yeah.
I don't want to, but I will.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. So that's more or less the strategy. It's much easier to say than it is to put into practice, but going through the steps, go to the balcony, uncover and focus on interests, invent options for mutual gain, use objective or independent standards, don't positionally bargain, and identify and remember your BATNA, your best alternative to negotiated agreement. Beyond that, you know, strategy, we were talking the other day about how understanding the person that you're negotiating with can help you to navigate that strategy better.
Yeah.
Yeah, could you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, I'm working a lot with this in my own practice right now. The idea of personality styles or personality traits, you know, many people listening to this podcast today have probably gone through either Myers-Briggs or a DISC profile, or that there's several others out there. Understanding who you're talking to will help you position yourself in each of these tactics better. Let's use DISC because it's easy, right? So if you're talking with a D, which is demanding or driver, right? That person is going to want to have authority. That person is going to want, their nature tells them, drive, focus, win, conquer, regardless.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to understand who that person is as you're dealing with them, right? If you're dealing with an I in that DISC profile, you're dealing with somebody that's gregarious, that wants to include, that mm-hmm. wants to collaborate, that wants to socialize and all of those things. So understand in that particular case, you would want to know who else needs to be on this team to make this decision, right? Right. Because they're going to want to collaborate naturally. Mm-hmm. So I guess that the point is just understand who you're talking to mm-hmm. and who you're negotiating with as best you can mm-hmm. so that you can have your best position as you're approaching these steps.
It seems to me that someone that seems more direct and authoritative in their personality would prefer a direct approach. You know, whereas a person that's more collaborative might prefer a more emotionally engaging approach.
Right.
You know, and so even breaking it down on those lines, I wonder if that's something. Because I know for myself, I tend to be that kind of a little bit more hard-driving personality. And I absolutely detest bullshit of any kind. Like, yeah. If someone starts me on a pitch, I sniff it out like a bloodhound. Yeah. And I'm like shut down.
Yeah.
Take 3 seconds, I'm shut down. But if that same person would have just been like, hey, I want to sell you this for this.
Yeah.
I would have probably been like, all right.
Yeah, I'm just like you. I'm a bullet point guy. Like, don't give me all the fluff and the detail. Right. What is the bottom line?
Don't you want to be successful? Yeah. You want to make $1 million?
And I understand that there's people like that. I have to morph my communication style to help them and to get this. But really, when you're talking to me, bottom line, what are the bullet points that I need to know? Let's make a decision. Let's move forward.
Yeah, I had a dude come in that wanted to do like a cleaning contract for whatever. And he came in and he budgeted like an hour of time for this presentation. Yeah. So I was late and I showed up in the last 5 minutes and, you know, he kind of waited. I feel a little bit bad about that, but I wanted to make the point to him that I was like, I don't need this time. Bottom line me. I don't want the pitch anyway. Yeah. He bottom lined it in 3 minutes. I signed the contract and the other two, he was out in 5 minutes. His hour meeting was successful, but I hopefully had demonstrated to him that he only needed 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah. 100%. Yeah. So know who you're dealing with.
Exactly. So we are running a little long for podcast time, so we might want to start to wrap things up in terms of negotiation examples. We've talked about some examples throughout, and if you want more examples, I would certainly love it if you would reach out in the comments section here in the on the website, or if you'd reach out in the comments section of the Facebook page, Facebook.com/TGCastNW. I want to recap the negotiation strategy, and that's go to the balcony, uncover their interests, invent options, don't positionally bargain, and remember your BATNA, and also remember the meta elements of negotiation, right? Understanding the people that you're dealing with and what their personalities are can help to have a better outcome ultimately. Any closing thoughts for the first episode? How'd it go?
I am absolutely thrilled. Well, I think it was fun for you and I to talk back and forth. We're both business people and coming from a perspective mm-hmm. of wanting to help and wanting to put out content that's really valuable. Yep. I think this was a great topic. Remember, you're negotiating everywhere.
Right.
So you're not excluded from the content that we've put out even today.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We really appreciate the fact that you've tuned in. For my closing, I would just echo that. I think this was a really fun conversation. I personally get a lot out of these. It's valuable for me to think about a topic, to talk about a topic, to talk about problems of practice. It's both interesting, but it's also super useful. So I think this is going to be pretty cool. Ultimately, we appreciate you coming. We invite you to like the episode on the website, tg-cast.com. We invite you to go to Facebook, like the page, and make sure that you comment and ask any questions that you have at Facebook.com/TGCastNW. And if you have problems of practice that you would like us to discuss in future episodes, shoot those over to us either on the Facebook page, on the website, or to our email, tgcastnw@gmail.com. On behalf of my fellow host, Dr. Eric Scroggins, I'm Jashar, and until next time, guys, stay on the grind.